Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. Vijay Khurana's debut novel, The Passenger Seat, has been described as a searing examination of male friendship and the broader social implications of masculinity in an age of toxic loneliness. The Passenger Seat focuses on two teenagers living in a Canadian border town, Adam and Teddy, who both have complicated relationships with the people in their lives, including each other. The two teens then embark on a chaotic road trip, and it doesn't end well. Vijay's novel is based on killings that occurred in northern British Columbia in 2019. So how did that inspire Vijay to write The Passenger Seat?
I was already sort of very interested in this sort of story. I'd been writing a lot of short stories about young men, the ways in which the kind of sexuality of straight young men kind of influences their friendships, their relationships with other people, the way they see the world. You know, I was writing a few short stories that also sort of had violence in them. And then when I read about this kind of real life story, there were a couple of echoes in there that really I felt were quite important to my thinking, you know, one of which was just the shape of the road trip. There was also some details in there that I felt were especially tragic, such as, you know, one thing that I put in the novel is this really kind of tragically childish attempt to sort of disguise the car that my two characters are driving.
Police say Sunday the couple pulled over at Liard Hot Springs, a popular tourist stop, but nearly 16 hours from the nearest major city, Juneau, Alaska. Monday morning, their bodies were found on the side of the road. Reports of missing teenagers on another remote Canadian road, their car found on fire.
But I do really see this novel as being quite different. I'm not trying to retell real events. I'm not trying to write any kind of true crime or anything like that by any means.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What made you decide on The Passenger Seat as the title of your book?
It felt very apt because there's this whole question running through the book of who is actually in charge. You've got these two characters, Teddy and Adam. They're quite different in many ways. They're friends. Adam is the only one who sort of has the driver's license. So Teddy is technically stuck in that passenger seat. And of course, the passenger seat has these overtones of passivity. You know, if you're in the passenger seat, you tend not to be responsible for what happens in that vehicle. But there's this question throughout the whole book about who's leading who, who's passive, who's a victim, and how do men kind of often paint their kind of portrait as a victim of their own actions in many ways. So I think it was a pretty important title that came to me early on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's the perfect title. And that's very well said how you describe that. What do you think it means to perform masculinity? And what does it reveal about your novel's main characters, the teenagers Adam and Teddy?
I have a sense that young men often see themselves reflected through those around them, you know, be they friends or be they rivals or be they even just somebody, you know, on a bus or a train who might even feel threatened by them or who might feel disgusted by them or any number of things. So I think there are any number of ways in which young men move through the world that are similar to what goes on in the novel. Obviously, I'm taking things to extremes. But I think that young men require to sort of see themselves as being part of a story, as being part of a narrative. And I think that, you know, there's a line in the novel that sort of young children are taught to share their toys with pride and reluctance. And I think those two things, that sort of pride in what you have, but also reluctance to kind of let in anyone else in or to share in a true sense. So there's a selfishness there maybe, or a self-focus that I think is certainly what's going on in this novel.
Yes, definitely. Absolutely. There is this undercurrent of foreshadowing violence that builds very slowly. We see Teddy and Adam getting a bit more violent with their words or their actions, and they're engaging in some one-upmanship. But then Teddy shoots two people, and that was a huge surprise for me. I was not expecting that at all. It was just whoa, like I had to go back and read that. Is that what I just read? Just very powerful. I'm curious about how you went about building that scene, and how does this level of violence affect the friendship going forward, the friendship between Teddy and Adam?
Yeah, I think it was the writer Hilary Mantel who once said, the hardest thing you can do as a writer is to make something happen suddenly. And there's a sort of an inevitability almost to what happens. And obviously you could talk about, say, the Chekhov's gun idea where, you know, they buy this rifle. So the expectation is it's going to be shot at some point. But it was a really hard scene to write because spending such a lot of time with these two characters was really actually quite emotionally sort of tough. And I also definitely didn't want to give a sense that the violence was in any way kind of being treated as entertainment in the book, but I felt it had to be there as well. I felt we had to see this moment where these potentially harmless sort of games between two friends and this one-upmanship turns into something much more serious and irrevocable, really.
Mm-hmm. Why did you decide not to show the rest of their violent acts?
I thought long and hard about this. I really felt like the first moment of violence really had to be there on the page. But after that, I didn't want to give a sense that ongoing violence was part of a sort of a progression of plot or sort of, you know, pushing the narrative along or as I said, in any way to be a kind of a thrill for anybody. Because that's not my intention with this book at all. And the other thing that I was thinking a lot about was that I worked as a journalist for a while, and I've always been very interested in the way the media handles this sort of violence, and the media often gives it its own kind of narrative for its own ends, right? Like it's trying to have more people click or more people listen or more people watch. And so I wanted to kind of explore some of that stuff as well. So part of what happens later on is that we may not see the violence on the page, but we do also then see almost like a commentary of how the media is handling all of the things that are happening.
Mm-hmm. Your characters, you have said that your characters are in many ways just really terrible people doing really terrible things. So it raises the question in my mind, do you have any empathy for them?
That's a good question. I will say this. I will say that somebody said to me recently, how do you feel about the prospect that readers might think, well, you're humanizing these terrible people? And my response to that was, well, humans do this sort of stuff and they do this sort of stuff all the time. So if we don't read them as at least human, then maybe we're missing something, you know, maybe we're not going to learn anything about what is a really serious problem and a problem that just keeps happening over and over again. So I wouldn't say I have that much empathy for them, honestly. And yet, of course, probably like any writer, there is a lot of me in those two characters. There's a lot of me and my friendships at that age and, you know, and road trips that I took. Of course, you know, nothing happened in my own life like happens in the book, but it's certainly sort of more personal than it might seem to the reader, because I was interested in all of these little moments of loneliness or little moments of affection between friends as well and things like that.
Mm, yeah. I want to get back to the road trip, which we've talked about a bit. And the road trip experience lends itself very well to your novel. And you've kind of covered that. But did you have a specific reason why you chose that as the framework?
It felt very fitting, is I guess the short answer to that. The road trip, the more I started thinking about the road trip, the more interesting it became to me. It's got all of these really interesting sort of juxtapositions and paradoxes. We tend to think very often about the road trip as a kind of maybe a rite of passage, often a thing that young adults do. And yet at the same time, it's almost like an abdication of adulthood, because you get in this vehicle and you drive through places, but you don't really have the obligation to stay and really come to terms with reality in whichever town you're driving through. You know, you're moving through the world with the windshield, you know, between you and the rest of the world. So you're not actually truly experiencing something directly. There's this kind of screen in front of you. And I think the more I thought about that, the more I thought that these two characters that I was writing sort of move through the world like that anyway. And that screen maybe is a metaphor for other screens, you know, like social media or like the video game that both of them play, or just the way that they have of not quite taking the world around them seriously.
Mm-hmm. Very well said. Yes, the video game Patriot is an important part of the novel. And also the video camera that they discover. Is it possible to talk about that without revealing any spoilers?
Sure. Yeah, the video camera is something that they come across, shall we say. But Teddy becomes obsessed, basically, with watching these videos that somebody else has recorded. And it's almost as though that's the only way he can kind of understand sort of the beauty in the world. You know, they're driving and they should be having these moments of kind of appreciating the world around them, but you never really see them quite doing that, or at least very rarely. And so Teddy is kind of fascinated by this other person's life that he gets to watch because he has this video camera with these simple but quite beautiful to him videos. Just of the landscape and of animals, and the person who's making these videos is sort of addressing somebody who's maybe his wife. And then towards the end of the first section of the novel, Teddy begins to film Adam, and this is kind of what counts for, I guess, a climax in that section, because as I was talking about the idea of these two young characters sort of wanting to leave something behind, but also wanting to mess with all of the people who might come along and try to psychologize them later, that leads to them making a sort of a very particular video together, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious if there are any plans to adapt The Passenger Seat into a movie, because it's such a cinematic read. I think it would work very well on screen. Anything you can report about that?
Not yet, no. I'd be interested to see what a filmmaker would do to it. Obviously, yeah. There are these two, maybe we haven't talked about it that much, but we've been talking a lot about Teddy and Adam, and there's this second section later which takes place a couple of years later and focuses on a minor character who we only heard really alluded to briefly in the first section. So I would be very curious to know how a director might put those two things together. Mm-hmm. But it would be interesting to see, I guess.
Yeah, I would love to see that. And I would like you to write the screenplay if I had that kind of power. But unfortunately,
sure.
I don't.
I mean, yeah. I'll take that.
Sure. What did you want to convey to your readers about how the media talks about male violence and how society consumes it?
I think I really felt there was some questions that didn't seem like they were really getting asked, given that this kind of thing happens over and over again. And so I think one of the things when we talk about how the media narrativizes male violence is this kind of dichotomy where one is a sort of a trauma narrative, maybe where someone has had something really shocking and horrible done to them, and that leads them to then sort of commit violence of their own accord later on. And the other is that whoever committed this violence must be so inhuman or monstrous that there would be nothing we could possibly learn from them. And I'm not saying that those two ways of thinking about violence are wrong on the face of it, but I do feel like maybe there's something missing there. Maybe there are questions there that we are not answering. I mean, I'm not trying to answer any questions with this novel. I guess I'm trying to explore questions and ask questions. And I hope that one of my hopes is that the reader will sort of walk away having read The Passenger Seat and sort of think to themselves, these questions are going to stay with me. I don't think there are easy answers to them. But as I said as well, just I'm interested in the way that the media can often turn tragedy into a sort of a commodified unit of news that's, you know, told in 60 seconds or 400 words or something like that as well.
Yeah, and as you mentioned earlier, you had the media coverage of what happened, and we got a little bit of that, and you obviously used your journalistic chops for that. That was a very intriguing part of the book as well.
Yeah, I think that I'd love to write more about that one day in a different book, because I do find that sort of thing very interesting, just the way the media works, the language that it uses, the tropes that it uses, the techniques that it uses, and the way that specifically sort of time is always used in a very specific way in the media.
Yeah, very well said. Vijay Khurana, thank you very much for joining us today, and thank you for the great conversation. Congratulations on The Passenger Seat. I can't wait to read your next book.
Thanks so much for having me, Doug.
Vijay Khurana is the author of the critically acclaimed debut novel, The Passenger Seat. Find out more about Vijay and The Passenger Seat at wpr.org/beta.
For me, I also just felt like he's an artist who I really wanted to try to give his due and try to leave you with a feeling that I had about him as well.
Coming up, director Alex Braverman discusses his award-winning documentary about the one and only Andy Kaufman. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.